Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The world outside your window, probably still not great, especially because here on Everything is Super, we're in the end game now. It's Avengers Endgame here, the end of the line of the Infinity Saga, certainly not the end of the line for Everything is Super, or even our coverage of Avengers Endgame. And in fact, things probably are pretty super for you, because you've been waiting for us to get here. And look, on your left, it's me, Josh Wigley, with Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, Avengers Endgame! Can you believe that we've gone all the way through the Infinity Saga? This is crazy!
It is wild. When we started this endeavor, I remember us being like, okay, we're going to commit to Phase 1. We want to get to Avengers. That's our goal. And here we are, still under pandemic orders, still trapped on the inside, and we've made it all the way through to Endgame, which is so crazy that we did it, but also so good that we got here.
It's
because
so
this
good.
this movie, like, oh my god, I ranted and raved about so many films in the MCU rewatch so far, but this one, you know, I remember us talking about how big this film was, how important it was, how it is a comic book event come to life, and it still feels that way. It still gets me in the right moments. I still get jazzed when Avengers Assemble is uttered, when On Your Left happens, when Thor comes, like, when Thor is just like, let's kill him good and proper this time. Like, that's such an awesome line. It's just,
It's the top shelf. This is top of the line. There's like a world where this could be a very short podcast because like everything is awesome. Everything literally is super in this movie. You know, we can spoil some of this stuff already. Like Avengers Endgame, it's number one in the Infinity Stone movie rankings. It's really not close. It's really not close. It's a 5.97 out of 6 is the full score after my 6, Kevin's 6, and a 5.92 from the listeners. That's it. That's in the front. That's a tie that is broken.
Hardly surprising on this. Hardly surprising.
We'll talk about the Thanos piece at a certain point.
We will.
And we'll talk about the post-credits thing at a certain point as well. Should come as no surprise that this is going to be number one on the final battle rankings.
Not even close.
Pretty easily.
Like, it's that final. Like, and we could even consider where we want to start it from, and it's still number one. Because
it's not worth having a debate about. It is worth, like, you know, standing and appreciating and applauding and crying, all of that stuff. So there's, like, the versions of this podcast where it's like, those are the headlines. This is the one. This is number one on the list. Are there some, like, problematic pieces of the movie? Sure, but they are completely offset by everything that is so awesome in this movie. At least, like, the balance is very heavily skewed in favor of, like, the ridiculous amount of ridiculous things that they successfully achieved. So it could be a short podcast in that realm. It could also be a podcast where you, dear listener, would have to speak and understand screams, because Kevin and I could literally just be going, ah! Ah!
Ah!
You know, for like an hour and a half. You know, it's one of those things where this movie is so deep. There's so much going on that if we did it at like the granular level, we could be here for 7 hours. You know, like Endgame is this movie that is like, it is so moldable. It is exactly what you make of it. I think it is like the definition of an achievement. This movie, you know, it is monumental. It is not the first time Kevin and I have talked exclusively about Avengers Endgame on a podcast. In fact, Kevin, I believe what brought you back into the post-show recaps universe after a bit of a hiatus was Avengers Endgame. And you and I got together and did that podcast. And that launched us into like a monthly Marvel podcast that was sort of like a precursor to Everything is Super. So we've already, you know, waxed poetic about this movie and like the immediate afterglow of it. I don't think that any of like the excitement that we felt then has been tempered at all from watching it again now. And I'll also say that this isn't going to be the last Avengers Endgame conversation that we have. We're going to be lingering on Avengers Endgame for the next few weeks here. This is the recap podcast. This is like the main podcast. We'll start here. We'll get through feedback here. Next week, Kevin is going to take a seat on the bench. He sacrificed himself for the Soul Stone. So he is going to be at the bottom of Boromir while Mike Bloom, myself, and the legendary Chappelle, the prolific Chappelle, will be podcasting Survivor Endgame. We will do Avengers Endgame in Brant Steele mode. We'll use that as an opportunity to wax poetic about all the different characters that are featured in Avengers Endgame and across the Infinity Saga.
Which I will have to say, if I'm going to jump off the Vormir edge to sacrifice myself for someone, Chappelle is a great person to do that with.
Yeah,
for.
I agree.
So I am all okay with this. I am fine taking that dive for Chappelle to live.
Take the jump. And then Kevin and I will be back the week after that with one final look back at the Infinity Saga. We'll use it as an opportunity to look back on everything that happened in all of the movies leading up to Avengers Endgame. Obviously, still there's Spider-Man Far From Home to look forward to. But I think that is it sort of feels like an in-between sagas movie. So I think in our conversation about the Infinity Saga, we want to talk about just through Avengers Endgame up to that point. And I'm sure we'll use it as a place to forecast not only what's next for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also what's going to be next here on Everything is Super. Because I just want to make sure that is really upfront. That just because we are caught up basically with the Marvel Cinematic Universe as it currently stands here on the podcast, Everything is Super is not going anywhere. Kevin and I, we committed to phase one, and I think that we've just had so much fun that there's just no world where we're stopping here. I think for me, I view this as a podcast that I would love to be doing for years with you, Kevin. So hopefully you feel the same way. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but like we're gonna be here talking about not only like super heroic stuff, but like eventually we will get to that Fast and Furious rewatch, and it'll happen here on Everything is Super.
I don't know if I could deal with you that long. That's a lot of time. Years? Yeah, of course.
We'll do some time traveling.
I would love to do some time traveling. You know that. But this podcast is great, and it's been so much fun talking to you about this stuff. I mean, you know, this is like continuing things that we've done since we, you know, first really got to know each other a decade ago when these movies first started coming out.
Yeah.
And so it's great to be here. It's a bright light in an otherwise dark time period.
Don't look out the window.
Just never look out the window. I'm really excited about continuing it. And I do think, you know, we talked about this offline. It does make sense to like kind of wrap the MCU Infinity Saga here, as much as the higher ups in Marvel is just like, well, no, Spider-Man Far From Home is the end. I'm like, is it? Like,
It's a bridge movie, which
is fine. And we love that movie. We've podcasted about that before as well. So I do think it makes sense to like, let's stop down for a moment. Let's really dive in and look at this cinematic achievement that Josh, we talked about this. I saw this movie twice in theaters. And when we recorded the first time, it was coming off that high. Watching it again, I still feel that high coming off of it. Like, it's been well over a year. We're approaching 2 years since this movie came out, and it still hits so many emotional moments. It's still one of the best theater experiences I have. If I ever felt a moment where I'm like, oh man, I miss theaters, it's reminiscing about Endgame. Beyond that, Not really. But, you know, there is obviously a lot about Theater of Zelda. But sure. That specifically, those moments are so great. And so, like, the community experience for that was so awesome. Yeah, and I'm excited to talk about when we get to the final battle, because I have a fun little Easter egg to share later in regards to that.
I think I know the vague shape of that. I look forward to having that crystallize. But no, I do think like the community aspect of this movie, the theatrical experience of this movie was unlike basically anything I had ever experienced before. The pop for Cap having Mjolnir, like just like the Avengers Assemble moment. There's just an insane amount of moments that just... watching this in the theater. I think I saw it three times in the theater, I'm pretty sure. And it's just incredible. I watched this for the podcast, Kevin, in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, with other members of the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. So that's something that I'm doing. We don't know if we're going to do this every single week, but we were calling it Wiggler Wednesdays. Where I watch something with the group and we talk about it, we have a good time. And it was really, really fun. And it was the closest that I've had to like kind of capturing what it feels like to watch a movie with a big group of people in a really long time. If that sounds like something that interests anybody who hasn't taken the plunge for the Patreon yet, that is like something that we're doing. And that's at the $10 tier. And it was super, super, super fun. But there was just all these moments where like, we were having like lots of chatter during a lot of like the fun stuff and the propulsive stuff, like the time heist and everything leading up to the time heist. And then like On Your Left happens and Chadwick Boseman is the first person you see, which obviously hit very differently this time. And just like sort of like seeing all of the different ways in which the emotionality like is laced into the big picture, like the big budget blockbuster level type stuff. In this, and it's so popular to be like superhero movies are just for kids and comic books are just for kids and you're a loser and like this is, you know, not for adults and there's nothing to get out of that stuff. It's like, all right, fine, Grumpy McGrumper Pants. If that's what you want to do, if that's how you want to play it. But the life that this film gives me, watching it again this time, really gave me in this time, in light of like everything that we are going through, have gone through, like the post-apocalyptic aspects of Avengers Endgame feel different watching it now in the COVID world. You know, seeing Black Panther come back like felt so different and just like felt like, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe that yet. There was just a lot of emotion packed into this and it made me feel very human. And for a movie of this scale, of this scope, to make you feel that way and not just get lost in the luster of it, because that's so easy to do and forgivable too, because the luster, Kevin, my God, it's lustrous. But it is so deep. It is just a deep movie. The nooks, the crannies, you want to explore them all. It is just a rich, rich movie that we could honestly have done like a 12-part series on Avengers Endgame very easily.
It's, yeah, I mean, you know, ditto to everything you said. And also, to me, you know, watching this again now, too, the acting was supreme. And specifically, you know, we've seen a lot of amazing acting throughout the MCU. But I did want to call out, you know, on this rewatch, especially at the beginning, I think the two people that made me shine, and I think specifically because we're so used to them being now kind of comedic, Chris Hemsworth, at the beginning of this movie, is incredible. Because you really, when you see Thor at his lowest, well, what we feel like could be his lowest, at the start, he conveys that depression and sadness so well. Like, when he chops off Thanos' head, you can see it's not a victorious moment. You can see the devastation, and the delivery for him is so good. And the other one to call out is Paul Rudd. When he comes back and he's there running to like look for Cassie's name and running back to see, like, especially coming off of Ant-Man and the Wasp. I mean, we kind of mentioned like the Cassie stuff is going to hit harder, and it did. It very much did. Like, there's such powerful moments from these two actors that were so used to being like, oh, they're funny guys now. And just like, oh no, they're good. They can bring that emotion. I mean, everyone in this movie, I think, was really crushing it. Obviously, we've talked about how Doctor Strange in this movie is so much better than the ones we've seen. That moment when, you know, Tony looks over and he just like looks at him and he holds up the one finger is such a powerful moment. Like, it's so well done. Tilda Swinton, who's barely in this, I think is like, I seeing her in this movie as the Ancient One, maybe be like, give me a full Ancient One movie. Like, she's great. I love her delivery. I love everything she does. Everyone in this movie is really shining, and it's great. And there's, like you said, all those emotional highs and lows. And I don't know who you could possibly also be talking about to make a comment about Marvel movies not having proper emotion and not being real cinema. I don't know who would have made such a comment in the Hollywood sphere. But anyway, it is.
Look.
We'll get into it. But you know, there's so much emotion in this movie. And you really feel it throughout, the highs and lows and everything. And it's so well executed. It's a phenomenal film that we could dissect so many ways to delve into and to pull apart from the characters, from the themes. It's just, it's so well done. And is it perfect? No, but what it is perfection, if that makes sense.
What it is perfection, but it's not perfect. I don't know if it makes sense, but I also don't know if the time travel makes sense, and it's still awesome.
It technically doesn't, but what I like, I'm obviously a super stickler for time travel, but they sort of established that these are people kind of spouting that they don't know necessarily how this works. This is all theory to them, right? And they're only putting into practice now. So it's like a scientific experiment. They theorize, they put it into practice, and now they're going to see whether or not their theory holds true. Which it doesn't, because we have a Loki series and we're gonna have a multiverse of madness. So it feels like they've definitely mucked up stuff that we're gonna have consequences about. But that's what happens when you mess with time.
Right, right. Well, that's one of the things that I love about this movie, and I think was such a difficult needle, eye of the needle to thread. That this is a movie that both has to. This is a movie that implied in its title and necessitated by its content. Has to feel like an ending to a certain degree because Robert Downey Jr. is leaving. Scarlett Johansson is kind of leaving. Certain things are ending here. Chris Evans is at least kind of leaving, if not outright leaving. You know, Captain America is gone. Iron Man is gone by the end of this thing. Black Widow is gone. So this has to feel like an ending, but we're also not stupid. And we also know that Marvel is making a crazy amount of money on this stuff and that they're going to keep doing it. And so the universe continues and the stories continue. And the world is going to expand well beyond this film. But it also has to simultaneously feel like an ending. And I think that the time travel and having that be something that isn't really trotted out until, I guess, kind of Doctor Strange and then much more and a little bit in Ant-Man and the Wasp and much more pointedly here in Endgame, that it is such an obvious setting of the stage for whatever we're going to get into next, that like this movie will have impact on future movies. Like this is going to be like sort of like a new origin point, a new inflection point for things that are coming next. And for that to exist in the same space as the big fond farewell to the giants that made this achievement possible in the first place is really, really spectacular, that they are able to come up with a movie that feels like the end of an era and also the beginning of one. Because I think that that's what this is. I think when we, you know, are 10 years from now, Kevin, talking about like, you know, Avengers, Galactal, you know, poop. I don't know. Like when we're talking about like whatever, like the next Endgame is, we're
going to look back. Clearly,
when we're at Galactic Poop and we're going to look back on Endgame, like we're going to look at Endgame as it wasn't just an ending. It was the start of something if they do things right. So, I think like the way that this movie closed things out, but also burst doors open is a real testament to what is special about this particular series of blockbusters, that like when you broad brush the concept of the modern blockbuster as completely lacking in artistic value, I think it is really unfair to the level of thought and care and business that's going on in the Marvel Studios system, but I think in service and in concert with the creative. And I think that this is one of those blockbuster series. There's just nothing like it. there's just nothing like an Endgame is such a totem for that stuff for me.
Yeah, and you know, looking toward the future thing that you're talking about too, you know, not for nothing, I was, after watching this and getting that feeling again of this from this movie, I mean, the circumstances are shit. We'll just say that about why this happened. But honestly, the 2 year break, the almost 2 year break of movies, I think is good.
I agree.
Like, coming off of this, going into like a Black Widow movie as well. Spider-Man was hard enough. Black Widow, like, this is such
an
achievement.
We're going to really want this stuff.
Right. And I think you're going to, you know, it's enough of a gap that it really breaks from the point of like the cinematic achievement and the Marvel Cinematic Universal achievement that is Endgame, and give us enough of a break to set up the new thing as opposed to just kind of going into it and then leaving us also like forever comparing it to like what Endgame achieved and forever having to live up to it. It's still going to, but I think this helps having this break in this way. It gets us excited and it kind of gives us enough distance between something so crazy good that it can sort of alleviate the almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Pressure, I guess, of hitting that again.
Yeah, the why behind it is brutal. And like, give me the choice between we had Avengers Endgame 1 year and then Black Widow the next, or we had Avengers Endgame 1 year and then at least 2 years later, Black Widow, because the world started melting. I'll take the first one for sure. Every day of the week,
yes.
I'll take that pick. I'm not a lunatic, but this is the world we live in. And in the world that we live in, we've had a long break from this stuff. So I think it is going to make us appreciate it more. I think it has the potential to benefit from the space. We'll see what all that looks like. I'm really excited about where this can all go, but I'm also just like the ride that is this movie. And this was something that we were remarking on during the live watch of Endgame the other day, was just like the amount of surprise baked into the film and the way in which it like bobs and weaves throughout its own like narrative fabric. Like there are just like a couple of moments that are just like so pleasing and so surprising. Like I think like because there are so many, there are some that get under discussed. Like a good example of that is when they slam to the Avengers Endgame credits and they're off already on the mission to go kill Thanos. They're like, okay, here we go. All right, we're cooking. And then the fact that they kill Thanos in the first 20 minutes of the movie, you're like, what's this movie? What is this movie going to be? And then I think the one that is even more shocking than that comes immediately after. And I remember gasps in my theater when this happened was 5 years later was like, oh,
yep.
You know, there's just like, that was a frickin' ride. And then like, there are just like all of these micro moments that like we now just kind of accept as givens. Like we accept that Thor is the Big Lebowski in this movie. That's just like a cultural thing. But the way that popped the first time is just like such a surprise. We just accept that Smart Hulk was a thing, but when he's there, just like turning pancakes into like tortillas for burritos, basically, and dabbing with the kids. Like, there's just like, seeing that for the first time and slamming from the cabin, the Tony Stark cabin to that is just unlike anything. There's just so many moments like that, that the entire ride of this film
is
delightful in terms of its art. Yeah, but like there's just like so many things, and just the architecture of this movie, I think, is really splendid and special. We had this feedback in from Jared, who wrote in and said, Endgame has perhaps the most cleanly delineated three-act structure I've ever seen in a movie. They start making the plans for the heist at exactly the one-hour mark. Hulk snaps at exactly the two-hour mark. Each of the three acts, it's absolutely outstanding on their own, but all together, I just don't feel like they mesh together as well as Infinity War, is Jared's feeling there. But that feeling of like the acts, I think, makes a lot of sense to me. I think Infinity War feels like a gigantic final battle. The whole thing like just feels like one act. Endgame does feel like this movie that is in components. And I love that about this movie. It's one of the things that makes this movie being at like a three-ish hour runtime not feel that long. It goes at a clip because there's just like so much happening.
It's almost like it's three issues of a comic book and each issue led into the other and there's little tie-in issues that maybe happen throughout. Like, it is that. You are right. And this is what I mean where I say it's not perfect, right? Like, it's not a perfectly fluid movie, but what it was delivered was perfection for the audience. And the experience was perfection. And I think it still holds up to that. Those little moments, you're absolutely right. Like, I mentioned the emails from the raccoon, of course, but like, there's things that you can be nerdy about where it was mentioned, like earthquakes on the ocean floor that everyone's theorizing could be, you know, Namor that's causing these things. There's these funny
the
lines.
Submariner, yeah.
Yeah, there's funny lines. Like, I really just loved it every time I watched it, and I still do. Like, Don Cheadle miming, strangling baby Thanos, like, slays me. I don't know why, but like, where he does the, like, the rope and then just tightens his arm. Like, it's just such a great... like comedic bit from him. Of course, everything with the time heist. The one thing I will say is that I really wish that when Tony was just like, you're telling me your entire thing is based on Back to the Future, and he says no, I really wish he said it's based on Back to the Future 2, because it is. It is more Back to the Future 2. It's like creating this timeline. We have to go back to fix something. It's way more Back to the Future 2. I really wish that was delivered, but I get why they didn't, because not every joke's written for me. But yeah, there's just so many things in here that I think work so well. And we talk about the Hulk, and Smart Hulk is great, right? Like, it's like the best Hulk. It's the Hulk that everyone kind of really loves, because he's such a different version than we've ever gotten throughout the entirety of the MCU and what we've seen from him. And the character beats are so great to me. I may have mentioned this when we did our first, but looking at it again, I really think you look at the original Avengers, the six, and they really are, you know, I go to this well, but it is a writing well to go to. It is the grief stages. Each one is representing a stage of grief. The only one who is not is the Hulk. And I do think it's because the Hulk doesn't have anything to grieve as much as the others. Like, he had a single movie that wasn't really connected. He never had his own side movie. He doesn't have his own branch of character. So he's sort of ending up as the Smart Hulk, almost separate from what the others are going through, totally makes sense to me. But if you look at it, like, you have Cap, who's in denial. He's been in denial since he got frozen. He is a man out of time who hasn't moved forward from that. And that makes sense from where his ending is. He went back to the stage of it. You have, of course, a Hawkeye is absolutely anger. He's going around slashing and hashing people as Ronin. You have Thor as depression, 100%. You have Natasha as bargaining. And for sure, it's bargaining. This idea of, like, if we just keep going. And she even outright spells it out when she tells Clint, it's like I've been trying, you know, working my hardest to get to this moment. It is her making a deal, making a bargaining idea of being able to get through this by doing the right acts. And then, of course, you have Tony, who hit acceptance. Tony has moved on at this point in this movie. He has had a kid. And I think that's so great and so well done in this film. In the same way that we talked about it when they did it in Lovecraft Country for an entirely different thing. But I think it works. It's such a, when done well, this almost tropey thing of hitting the stage of grief can be very, very cleverly and powerfully done. And I think they did it really well here.
Yeah, I think that that's a great pull. And I think that they have very compelling stories to tell for all of the original core Avengers here. You know, Iron Man finally, you know, interestingly, I think actually like the Iron Man ending is not far away at all. And in fact, it's just like the final fatal version of what he does in the first Avengers movie, right? Like in the first Avengers movie, you know, there's the conversation between him and Captain America about you would just cut through the wire. There's always a way out. You would never do the sacrifice play. And he makes the sacrifice play in the first Avengers movie. And so he does it again here. And I think that that is something that you see often is like, you know, I think as like a series, as like a film turns into a series or as a book turns into a series of books. Often I think that you'll find a lot of the landing points are not far off from emotionally where they got to in the first thing, because that's like, if we can only shoot our shot once, like, this is what we're trying to say. And they get there in just like this big macro way with Iron Man here. And I think that they do it in this way that makes it feel very intimate, yet seismic and intergalactic, not just global, like the ramifications of what he's done. And for that to come from the hero who starts this cinematic universe, that like without Iron Man, we just don't have any of this. None of this happens if not for Robert Downey Jr. And I think that that makes that final monologue of his all the more powerful. It's not just that like we're losing this and that this is leaving us, but like these are the words of somebody who's like kind of like, and in his like signature Robert Downey Jr. way, is like sort of like, can you believe this? Can you believe that this world is filled with all of this stuff? This is crazy. Like it's just, it's very, very much on the pulse of, I think, how people who either grew up with these movies, or in the case of you and I, you know, in our own way have grown up with these movies, right? Like this has marked our adulthood so far. So I think, to have all of that threaded through Tony as acceptance and his journey in this movie of recognizing that, like, you know, he's finding peace with like his dad and finding peace with himself as a parent and the idea of parenthood and what it means to protect someone and all of the things that he's discovering along the way. I think it's really powerful to thread that all through him. So I think he's like the really obvious best arc of the core six of the movie. But the Captain America ending gets me every single time. I think the transformation from Thor being in like depressive Lebowski state to being like Viking God of Thunder again is really super powerful and awesome. The Smart Hulk stuff is just fun, and it's a great culmination of his whole story, that like this tragedy of becoming the Hulk isn't a tragedy. There was a reason for it. It was so I could save the world. And like he now has like the Bruce Banner intelligence and empathy to recognize what he has gotten with his physical strength. Like those things are like married together in this way. Makes that very, very, very satisfying. I guess this is the part where we got to talk about Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Yeah. You know? We should.
We've done this before. We've talked about this before. You could go back. You could listen to our original Avengers Endgame podcast. But obviously, I think like there are still some measure of like raw feelings about the way that this is written, and like Black Widow like sacrifices herself because Hawkeye, you got a family, you know, and there's like stuff like that maybe doesn't sit so well. And I think all this time later, like I don't know. I mean, it could be Scarlett Johansson wants out. She wants to do the Black Widow movie, hand it off to Florence Pugh and peace out, and that's it. And so they're going to kill her off anyway. But I do think that like there were probably ways that this could have been done better. Like, I do think that to me, this still feels like the weakest part of the movie.
Yeah, I will say, you know, on the rewatch, I do think I have to throw it to the writers and the creators here that I do think they made it made sense. Like, I think, you know, I think it is a case where someone was like, well, we can't have two people with, you know, children murdered in this movie. That we can't do that. And you know that this is happening to Tony, so you're not going to be able to do it to Clint. But beyond that, like, I think maybe that was decided. The writers did a good job, because on the rewatch, again, I think if you look at what Black Widow's story is, this idea of bargaining, it makes sense that it had to be her. I do think my biggest issue in it is the lengths in which it goes through where they're just fighting each other. My fiance Robin did point out that it is interesting because it is sacrificing something you love, right? That's the idea. You have to sacrifice something you love in order for it to happen. If Widow had just zapped him and jumped, technically he didn't make a sacrifice. Like, she made the sacrifice, right? So having him holding her and have to drop, have to have her let go, have to have her fall is a sacrifice. It is him, you know, whether fully, you know, doing it or not, like in that way, making the sacrifice. So it kind of makes sense that it has to have that moment. I just wish they cut out the middle parts a little bit more to shorten it, because it kind of went on for like those 30 seconds too long, where it's just like, I zapped you and now you arrowed me and then I jump, but then you did and it's just like, okay, we get it. We want to showcase them for a moment. That's my biggest issue now with it. I still, again, I do think like it's nuts that so many people have died for Hawkeye, but here we are. So yeah, it's a weird part, right? We lost Quicksilver, we lost Widow for this guy so he can hang out with his family, and his weird haircut, his grungy look, I'm emo now haircut, I'm punk now, sorry, that's different. He's definitely punk, not emo. But like, it's so weird. It's one of the weirdest parts of the movie that like, we can absolutely feel free to pick apart. I do think, you know, my feelings were made pretty evident on movie culture and how they kind of treat people with children versus treat people without. But again, all said, in retrospect, like, the writers did the best they could with that moment. Like, you know, for the reasons, I think, the reasons for the sacrifice, I think, made sense. Weird pairing that they did this, though, to be like, you two go, knowing what's supposed to happen. Can you imagine?
They probably
like,
should have, yeah, they should have, like, arced out the Boromir piece of this a little harder. They should be like, so, just FYI, peeps who are going to Boromir, one of you is not coming back.
Yeah, right? Like, it could have been something. It was very much also like an audience thing. Like, the audience had to know while the characters didn't because it creates dramatic tension. But realistically, you would have, like, what if someone was just like, oh, okay, Widow, you go with War Machine. And then, like, Nebula's like, no, we can't do that. It has to be Widow and Hawkeye. It can't be Widow and War Machine. Like, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, why?
Yeah.
I can't tell you. Like, what was that conversation?
I was thinking that, like, what if like they went with like what if they befriended like a fun alien animal along the way? You know, like, oh, we love this little guy, and they're like, oh, you got to make a sacrifice. What do you love? Oh, sorry, little guy.
I don't know if it's an animal like Gus, I'm throwing Hawkeye over that cliff again.
Gus is Kevin's small dog, FYI. Look, if I had to throw like small space Gus over, or you, I think I would throw a small space Gus over.
No, you take me down. I will jump over that cliff as Gus nips at my heels. I'm like, no,
small space Gus isn't gonna podcast as well. It's not
as he starts,
yeah, as your dog
as he
is
starts
barking right now in the background. Yeah. Yeah.
He has feelings about this.
Listen, don't be too flattered, Kevin. There is a business consideration here. Is that like if I were to lose you, it would be harder to replace you than it would be to replace Space Gus.
I appreciate that your financial situation is tied to my livelihood.
That's it. That's all there it is.
That's all it is.
I hear all that. I think we will have a lot of time to have Black Widow conversations in the future. And I think a lot of this for me still depends on what are they going to do with Black Widow the movie. Is Black Widow the movie going to be a handoff to Florence Pugh as like the new Scarlett Johansson in the MCU? Are they still back pocketing some sort of way to bring Black Widow back? Like, you know, the Natasha version, the Scarlett Johansson version, we truly don't know. So this still kind of remains a little bit of a cliffhanger to put it on the nose. Like, I do think like there are aspects of this that we still just like, we don't know the full picture of it yet. But if this is like unsatisfying for people, if people take extreme issue with it still, I can't fault them for it. I think like, and it's especially tough when you have like the enormity of the final battle without Black Widow being there. And especially like when all of like the powerful women of the Marvel Cinematic Universe are together and Black Widow is not there. Like you feel that, I think. I think that absence is felt and not necessarily in a way that benefits the movie. Whereas like if Hawkeye was gone, like no one would really bat an eye. And I guess like that is the piece of why like it can't be Hawkeye there. Except that I felt like on this rewatch, I do think that there was like a version of the Hawkeye storyline where you could invest a little bit more in him as a character and make that moment really matter if he were to sacrifice himself. So I don't know. Put me in the camp of like I would have been totally cool to get rid of Hawkeye in this moment.
I mean, you know my feeling. I mean, I think story-wise they would have to tweak some stuff because again, I do think thematically Widow representing bargaining made sense for that. I guess I don't know. Her presence maybe was missed. I wouldn't call out that scene as the moment that her presence was missed just because that scene is so glaringly out of place to me.
Yeah.
Where they come together. I think I mentioned this when watching Infinity War. That moment in Infinity War, the like she's not alone, is a billion times more organic and better. I think you could have done this moment rather have them like literally squat up. You could have had it where you know, like maybe one or two of them were there. And as they're traveling through the battlefield, Captain Marvel, Carol is being helped by other female heroes as it's happening, almost like in the Avengers, original Avengers style tracking shot. Do that, where you track through and all the other female Avenger characters are showing up in that moment. I think that would have been more organic than having all of them show up as if they were like 2 seconds ago nearby. It's very odd. And it does feel, unfortunately, a little too pandering in that moment. It's like if all the, like, I would have felt the same way if all the minority heroes somehow all gathered together, all two of them, and were there, you know, it would have felt weird. It is weird not having Black Widow there, especially considering how long she's been there, especially again for Hawkeye. I know we trash on Hawkeye a lot. He's not the Matt Fraction Hawkeye, or else maybe I would have been a little more into him. And also, that's happened before. We've had a hero sacrifice themselves for him. So it's sort of weird to have that keep happening as a running theme. It also sort of makes him less of an Avenger, where your only reason you're still around is because two other heroes had to die for you. Yeah. Very odd.
Yeah, and he's already just the Archer. Yeah. So it's like, pull your weight, man. We're losing people for you. What do you bring to the table?
Haircuts, I guess.
This is interesting. I didn't know this. Mike Edwards wrote into us and said, I was looking at the extras on Disney Plus. There's an alternate scene where Nat and Clint are going through who should die, and she says out loud, it's because of your family that she wants to make the choice. And then they get attacked by Thanos' people. They both get shot a couple of times, and Thanos himself shows up, and because she's been shot very near the heart, she's the one who jumps, and that's how Hawkeye gets the stone. Did not realize that that was a thing.
I didn't know that.
I don't love
either.
That. The version that they end up with is much better.
I agree. I think it takes away a certain amounts of agency by having them get attacked. It's very weird to have Thanos show up there at that moment with these two particular characters. So I definitely prefer the way it ended up over that. And I obviously the creators also felt that way. I feel like it would have added an action beat. And sometimes you have to be like, okay, well, we need an action beat in this moment. But I'm glad that they backtracked and changed their mind on that. I feel like that's happened a few times in this movie. That one is a good one where they had different routes to take, and they chose, I think, the better one.
On the tip of the final battle, this came in from Raider Man. Raider Man says, I felt the need to send an email on this because every time I watch this movie, I have the same reaction to quote unquote that scene. Captain America, beaten and broken, staring out at an insurmountable enemy that will soon overwhelm and destroy him. He stands up, straps on his now shredded shield, and gets ready to go one versus a million, knowing he is facing certain death. That's who he is, standing and fighting until he can't anymore because it's the right thing to do. Then we hear Cap on your left, the portal opens, the beat drops, and out comes T'Challa and company looking at him like, we got your back. Every damn time I cry. I'm not a crier, guys. That's not me trying to be macho either. I'm just usually a very stoic person who internalizes things and doesn't show emotion very often. But this whole scene makes me sob every time. It throws me into a tailspin that lasts throughout the rest of the movie. Elation at Avengers Assemble, tears again when the women Avengers take over for Spidey, several laughs in the action of the battle, and then I'm wrecked when Strange puts up the one finger. The entire saga leads to this final hour, and it's a perfect 60 minutes. Zach Brooks also adds, will I ever have the movie theater feeling I had when Captain America says assemble again? Maybe not.
No, I mean, it's wild because like that one is so, you know, if we want to get into the final battle, I'm so ready for this. That moment, it's so crazy because when I watched the original Avengers, I remember being like, that's so weird. Why did they say Avengers Assemble? And every time I was always just like, man, they're not going to say it. I guess it's too comic booky. But it's like, no, they're waiting for the right moment. And this was the moment. And it is such a moment. Like that particular scene, just calling out the assemble part of it, the score is perfectly matched. The beats are great. Seeing them all lined up like that, the pause as he catches Mjolnir, it's perfection. And I don't think we're ever going to get a moment like that again because it is the achievement. It is, if this is what Marvel has been working toward, this is what they've been wanting to be like. All we have to do is get here. If we accomplish this, nothing else matters. We did this. And I do think that holds true. No matter what happens after this, this moment will stand throughout as easily the best moment in comic book movie history. It's great. And it starts really, as said, like from that hour mark, like the moment the snap happens, I vividly remember the going through the emotions in there where, you know, Hulk makes the snap. They raise the doors. You know, Hawkeye gets the call and Scott is there looking at the birds and he's so happy seeing all those birds. And then the shock of the moment of the missiles hitting. And at the time, I was just like, did they just kill Ant-Man? Which would have been wild.
Me too. Yeah, yeah.
But on, I mentioned this, I think, on rewatches, you do see him shrink. You actually see the moment as it hits. He jumps backwards and you see him shrink down instinctually. So I do like that was in there visually. But like from that moment, holy shit. Like the movie is nonstop jaw drops, right? Like you have the three of them assembling to fight Thanos. Thor's amazing moment that was this movie, this entire arc for him was leading up to the let's kill him, you know, proper this time, where he catches both Vikings out with the braided beard, looks awesome, and all of them attack Thanos. Cap picking up Mjolnir, like when it flies back into his hand, everyone in the theater losing their mind. Of course, on your left, the screams and shouts. I've mentioned this, and this is where my Easter egg is about to come out. I've mentioned this before. I love this moment. It is one of two moments I sometimes go and watch whenever I want to get both inspired and emotional over things. I will pull up the Doctor Who Day of the Doctor, which is an assembling of its own, and this moment of the final battle sequences and theater reactions specifically, because it puts me back in that moment of theater reactions. I've watched a lot of them. And recently, I would say at this point, Josh, it's been 2 or 3 months, like maybe 2 months. Time has no meaning. But I found another one and I watched it and it was a huge one. It has millions of views and I turned it on and within 2 seconds, I was like, oh my God, that's us. It was not only my theater, 100%, but whoever recorded this was literally right next to us, like behind us, because you could hear me, you could absolutely hear my friend Danny, and I'm like, oh my God, that's us, like, you hear, reliving my own reactions, like, to the theater. I was sitting there like, it was a double whammy, because I'm experiencing the emotions that I felt while listening to myself experiencing the emotions for the first time. It was so weird finding it. I sent it immediately to the group chat I'm on with Danny, her husband Sheldon, who is a friend of ours as well, and my fiance Robin. And I was like, guys, this is us. And immediately from Danny's voice was especially distinct, saying he's worthy when Cap gets the hammer. We're like, that's Danny. That's absolutely, this is us. This is our theater. This is someone sitting right near us. It's what a moment. Like it still brings me joy.
And we'll link to that in the show notes so people can hear
that. I'll find a link from the group and I'll share it so you'll
be able to hear Kevin's actual reaction to everything going on in Avengers Endgame. That's so pure.
It's amazing.
You know, the world is such shit, but like that is like one of those moments where like maybe we can do this.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> Because like that has been captured. Like, what are the odds? And for it to have been one of like the really highly trafficked reaction videos and you are one of the voice actor stars of it, is really incredible.
It's great. And like the emotions are all there, right? The joys, the excitements, the sadness for I Am Iron Man at the end. The emotion of Spider-Man talking to Tony, like there's just so much in that final hour that they do, so many things that are really great, and jokes even, right? Like Thor and Cap is like, no, what do you take the little one, like, you know, that's fantastic where they trade hammers. You know, I really love, and we can get more into this later, like Thanos in this movie is really interesting. I know for a lot of people he doesn't rank as high as he did in Infinity War, and I get that, and I have reasons why I think he does. But we can get there on that one. There's just so much, man, in that moment, just the fan payoffs. And I think, you know, there's so many writers, there's so many, creators out there, and you look at it and things that we've seen, especially in the nerd community, even where it's just like, no, we can't give the audience what it, what they want, because then, you know, that cheapens the show. We have to either twist or change an ending, or, you know, like just do something different so they don't get that joy and they don't expect it. But no, I think, you know, writing advice from a guy who's a wannabe writer, not even a real one. You can do these moments. You can have these things if you earn them. And I think Marvel really earned it. They did so much throughout here to build goodwill with the fan community, to deliver the type of stuff we're looking for, that when you have these moments that are clearly playing towards fans to give them what they want, it's worth it because we're excited to see it. It's not just, you know, trying to placate us. It doesn't feel like forced in certain ways. It just feels natural and it feels exciting and it feels awesome. And this movie gave it to us. And I think that's why it has such a great reaction, is that it gave us things that we have been hoping and waiting for, because we've been there with them for 10 years running. And it all culminates in these moments. You have the moment where the Wasp calls him Cap, throwing back to Avengers and Wasp, where she's making fun of him, right, saying that. You have, you know, Black Panther saying, "Clint, give it to me." When their first meeting, he tries to introduce himself as Clint and Black Panther says, "I don't care." You have, you know, a great reversal there. There's just all these little things that I think play out so very well. You have Queen's heads up. Like, it's so well done. It's so Easter egg laden. It's so fun and dramatic and just action packed. My God. The fights in there, seeing Wanda almost takes down Thanos. That's
stop
awesome.
Right there.
That's
yeah.
so cool. And
but
like,
that's another example of how this is a movie that's setting shit up. You
yeah.
know, like, cause like now they're showing just how powerful Wanda Maximoff is when she's unleashed. And like that version of Wanda in that moment, for her experience, is minutes removed from what happened to Vision. So like the level of power and emotion and tragedy and grieving and anger that is coursing through her is at its highest that it could possibly be. And they like hinted at that stuff in Age of Ultron a little bit too, after Quicksilver, for them to do that again here, and for her to do what she does to Thanos. And like, if not for Rockets, not the raccoon, she would have probably ripped him to shreds in that moment.
I think she would have absolutely destroyed him in that moment, and he knows it too. That's why he requested it. Like, her power levels here are very evident. It's almost like if she were to have some sort of break from reality, it could lead to a massive disassembling of the Avengers or something. Haha, references to comics, Avengers disassembled. Anyway, that stuff is great. You have Carol showing up in a really cool moment. You know, her showing up was even the coolest moment for her. Like, they kind of, you see Thanos' face when she shows up, and he already knows, like, ooh, this doesn't seem good. And when he tries to headbutt her, what a fantastic moment. And she doesn't flinch. And I love that, because you also have this moment where he headbutts her, he realizes the problem, and he pulls the Power Stone, and that's the only thing that's able to, like, break her momentarily, is literally having him hold the Power Stone in his hands as you see it almost destroy him. You see the Power Stone's effect on his hand happening immediately, and he has to blast her and then put it back. Like, that's also showcases the power level of that character, which we've talked about in the Captain Marvel podcast, and where that character's gonna end up going after this. There's so much really cool stuff here. It's so, so dense and so great. That last hour could be a dissertation in and of itself, as you've mentioned. We could do hours on that part alone.
Yeah. And it's like, not even speaking of like all of the various characters in this movie that are so great that like, just in this first podcast, we're not going to have as much time. I think, like, ironically, through the Survivor podcast, we will probably be able to, like, as people are getting voted out, stop down and appreciate some of these people as they're getting knocked out. But, like, Nebula! Karen Gillan is so good in this movie. And one of my favorite things that I caught on this rewatch is how Tony's story in this movie begins with finding a friend in the far side of the universe who is Thanos's daughter, you know, finding a friend in the far side of the universe who is going to be the daughter of the person who will be his undoing. Like, I think that the way that those two things connect, but also like Nebula's relationship that she obviously had started to develop over the course of Guardians 2 and then is pushing forward through an Infinity War. But the 5-year time jump allows for all of that to escalate even further, where like Nebula and Rhodey are just tight. and you just accept that. You accept that Nebula and Rhodey are just like totally tight. They've probably talked like 1,000 times. What does she say? Like, Rhodey, there's like an ugly human in the runway or whatever she says.
On the runway. Yeah, watch the landing.
You know, like the and Karen Gillan having to track like that version of Nebula and then also going back to the person who she was and having those two characters confront each other, like a movie of this size, it's so special that it has the space to explore that in the story and in the writing. And just as impressive to have the caliber of performance that they have in Karen Gillan as Nebula, who I think is like in the same way as like Paul Rudd as Ant-Man is a real secret gem in this movie. I really think Karen Gillan as Nebula, for me, each time I go back to this movie, I just appreciate even more and more and more, which feels increasingly impossible considering how much I loved her on the first watch of this film. I just think that the work she does in this movie is some of like the franchise best acting from anybody across the board.
She's fantastic in this. The two versions that she plays for Nebula are so great, and there's so much emotion and power behind them. There's a moment I really liked in this one especially is when they get back at the beginning and her and Rocket are sitting together and like they put their hands on each other, and it's just such a sad, wonderful moment between those two characters who have lost their families basically in this entire, you know, thing that they hadn't seen each other. They got back together and realized how much they both have just lost. Is really great. She's so good. I really like Karen Gillan a lot. And, you know, for me, I've liked her since Doctor Who. That's where I was first introduced to the character. And, you know, her character of Amy Pond is one of my favorite Doctor companions ever. And that story arc with, you know, those that in that time period is phenomenal. So I really liked her then. I tried to watch one episode of Selfie and couldn't get into it, but I heard that show actually got really good once it stopped trying to be a network sitcom. But like, this is where she's really shining. And then Jumanji especially, like, I highly recommend watching Jumanji films if you're a Karen Gillan fan as well. Like, her range as an actress is incredible, and you really see it here because she has comedic moments, she has dramatic moments. It's like I said, everyone in this movie I feel like is really, really shining through. Her and Tony at the beginning playing the football game and her not quite understanding it yet was fantastic. You had those moments where she's like flicking it and she's like, what did I do? Did I get it? Which is actually really fun because something I didn't catch the first time around is that when they're back in time and Ant-Man's like, flick me to Tony, and he's able to like perfect shot Hawkeye style flick Ant-Man to the right spot, it's because he's been playing the football game in space the whole time. And I was like, oh, that's so clever. That's why he's good at that, because they set it up early that him and Nebula were just playing that for like days and weeks on end.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of great like character beats like that all through the movie. It's the best. I mean, it's just and like, I know some people are like, oh, that whole second act of the time heist is just like self-referential patting itself on the back. And it's like,
they deserve to.
Fine. Like, if that's your interpretation, then even at that interpretation, they earned it for sure. But it's like more than that. Like, you get Hulk and the Ancient One. No one, like, what a weird combo. You would never think of that. You get the Cap versus Cap, and that's America's ass moment,
it's great.
You know? And Cap in the elevator and getting to, like, yes. Have, like, a really funny call and response to Hail Hydra.
The cameos, man, in this flashback. Like, Robert Redford coming out, of course, Rumlow and Sitwell. Like, there's so many people. Your favorite dude with his line of Stephen Strange.
Mm-hmm. I know, my least favorite.
Yeah, it's the cameos, dude. Like, it's wild that there's so much. You have those moments when Hulk, you know, having to smash, and he's just like, I think it's gratuitous, but whatever. Like,
so funny. So funny. Great. Yeah. Yeah. Is it a perfect movie? No, but what it is, it is perfection.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. I feel that for sure. On the subject of Thanos as the bad guy, I gave him a 6, and I know Kevin gave him a 6 as well. He'd gotten a 5.9 for Infinity War, which put him at 5.97, and, you know, king of the bad guy rankings. But he falls a little short here. He's a 5.5 from the listeners. And gets a 5.85 overall, which means that in our villain rankings for the Infinity Stones, Kevin, not only is Thanos from Infinity War the better Thanos, according to the listeners, but the Thanos from Endgame is not the second best villain of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Eric Killmonger retains the title.
Damn, he does.
it's a Thanos sandwich with Killmonger in the middle. I still ranked him a 6, but like the Infinity War Thanos, I would rank like a 7. You know, I would rank a 7 out of 6, and then the Thanos in this one, I would rank a 6 out of 6. The Thanos in Infinity War breaks the scale for me, and the Endgame Thanos, it's still Josh Brolin, and I was thinking about this, do I want to do a ceremonial 5.9, because I do think there's a distinction, and I decided against it because I felt like the listeners would keep us honest. They would keep this process honest. And also then I started thinking about like some of like the, when Thanos is like, in all of my years of conquest, violence, and just like the way Josh Brolin like intones, and the way he like spits out certain words, he's like, I am going to enjoy this, you know, like the sadistic quality that Thanos takes on, knowing that he succeeds at some point in his life. And that this version of himself, his destiny is to like reinforce the success, right? Like he knows that like he has to break off from the multiverse. A version of me did this. And now my quest is to go and get the stones and like advance the ball and stop these fools from stopping what I've done. I like that version of the character. I like that he's kind of like a slightly younger, cockier version of the first Thanos. But the first Thanos is just, I don't know, man. Like, how do you top it when it's his movie?
So this is my argument of why I gave him a 6, because I understand, you know, people looking at it and this isn't as good as the one in Infinity War. And I understand that argument. Absolutely. But that's not how I see this. This is a little bit different for me than how we were ranking Loki, because we're looking at a character that at different points in his time who has accomplished different things. And we have a deeper dive into his motivations and stuff like that. To me, this is not two separate Thanoses. This is the same Thanos. This is the same person. And I think that's what makes him great. That's what makes him such a good villain. Because in this movie, you strip away all that self-righteousness he has. You strip away all his pomp and posture about what he's doing and why. And you see the truth of who he actually is. Yes, this is a version that's a little bit in the past, but it's a version who gets to see his plan come to fruition. He gets to see what happens when he actually accomplishes his goal, looked at the consequences of it, and once again has moved his own goalposts, his own mental gymnastics to be like, okay, well, it wasn't me. It was clearly these heroes that are the problem, because that is who Thanos is. They did a great job establishing this character who wanted to charm us, this cult leader who is trying to explain he's doing so good for the world by doing this and the sacrifices you have to make. And if that sacrifice somehow then included himself at the end because of the consequences of his actions, he wasn't for that, because he's like, well, I didn't get to actually do the plan I wanted, so I have to wipe everything. Oh, so you're changing your plan then. That's what you're trying to say here. And I think that's what makes him a 6 to me, because this is the same dude. This is the same guy when you really, really look at him. And I think that's what makes him an incredible, incredible antagonist. I think that's what makes him a great villain. And that's why I had to give him a 6 for this, because to me, it is the same level. It is the same person once you really strip away that veneer and that pomp that he has and this like self-righteousness. So I love that. I love that they did that with this character.
I also thought the design and like his double-edged sword is super cool. It's like he's got two Cloud Strife Buster swords mashed together.
He just fused them together. But he went probably to Midgard on his travels and snapped Midgard
twice.
Away.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's cool. As far as post-credit rankings, I guess I was like a sour ranker here. Is that a thing? Like a rancor that has like a sour mouth? And I ranked it, so it's not really a post-credit scene, it's a post-credit sound, and for that I docked it a point, so I gave it a 5 out of 6. It's obviously very emotional, and we're throwing back to Iron Man making the Iron Man suits, the guy who made it all happen, but it's just a sound.
It is the sound. Like, so this movie, another reason too, and you know, sure, if it is for my own pomp and circumstance of my own, I gave this movie 6s across the board. It's the only movie in the MCU that has full 6s for me. This is it. There's no other one that actually hit the full 6 mark. And I love that. I love, we all sat there and we all waited, right? Like, post-credit scene is their jam. And they didn't give us a scene, they gave us a sound. But it is a great follow-up to an amazing credit sequence. Like, you know, Twilight does this same BS and did not earn it, where they're just like, we're gonna show everyone from the history of the Twilight franchise with sad music and have the, you know, their credit, their name credits and their characters. They never earned it in Twilight. In this, it's earned, and you have the great score in the background. You have the countdown to your characters. You have the original Avengers when the score picks up to that main hook and ending on Robert Downey Jr., the man who built it all. And that's why I think that sound is so good. That's why I think that sound is so important, because it's not just him building the armor. That is a sound of Robert Downey Jr. and Tony Stark building the MCU, building everything we saw, because that movie did that. We've talked about the importance of Iron Man. That's the importance here, man. We never would have gotten here without that. We never would have gotten here without Tony Stark building a suit of armor in a cave with a box of scraps. That's like having that sound after his sacrifice, having that be the last sound of the Infinity Saga is, I think, so poignant and so great and so emotionally powerful that I adored it and I still adore it. And it's getting me a little bit emotional now, just thinking about it, just thinking about like what Robert Downey Jr. did, the fact that, you know, the sacrifice of Tony Stark, it's just so great. And another one of those like little moments that I think are in a way for the fans that speak to not having a no post credits, but having something that still is just like a thanks, not just to the fans, but to the guy who kind of built it all.
Yeah, I get that. I still give it a 5 because it's just a sound.
It's fair enough, man. I'm just explaining my reasoning.
If I'd given it a 6, I think it would be the number one post credits ranking, because Nick Fury gets a 5.7 and Thanos at the end of Avengers gets a 5 from the audience. And this got a 5.8 from the audience. So if I'd given it a 6, I think this would be at the top. So I'm glad I gave it a 5 because I think Nick Fury deserves to be at the top.
Fair enough. I'm not going to argue about those top 3 rankings. It's what I think is well deserved.
So that's where we are. The informal stones for final battle rankings, I think Endgame at the bottom, right?
Yeah, like,
I think I mean, just after The Incredible Hulk.
It's not very good. We just spent like most of our time talking about that ending battle.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say. It's number one with a bullet. Infinity War is an entire final battle and it's amazing, but like the emotional payoff and the fact that we win, and the way that we win is we lose in the victory, you know, like it's just great. It's just, it's perfect. It's a perfect thing. So yeah, number one for sure. Stan Lee cameos. So this is Stan Lee's, it's in the 70s, 70s Stan. What does he say when they drive past him in the car?
Make love, not war, or something like that.
and so that's him circa Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I guess timeline-wise it would be, right?
I think that's right. We were saying that we think that it's him in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
No, it's 100%
right?
Him in Ant-Man and the Wasp, because I even looked. It is the same car that disappears, where he's just like, the 60s were wild, but now I'm paying for it. Like, it's a great little reference. It's the last Stan Lee we get, unfortunately. And I do love it. I don't think it's going to hit probably the top 3, but I do think it's up there for its spectacularity.
Well, so we've got Guardians 2 at the top, where Stan Lee is the Watcher. Age of Ultron, where he's getting wasted at the party and drunkenly saying, Excelsior. Is this better or worse than Stan Lee taking T'Challa's money?
I do love that moment. I can't put it above that, right?
Like, every time I say that, you...
It's just so good.
So it's got to be below that. Is it above Stan Lee in the 1990s on his way to audition for Mallrats?
Oof. I feel like it might be a competition for those two for me, because the Mallrats
one... the very next spot is the Ant-Man and the Wasp in the car. So, you know, do we put this above that or below that?
I might put it above that.
Great. Let's do it. It's the final one. So long to Stan, who, you know... without whom we're not here either, let alone Tony Stark. So the final Stan Lee cameo. of the Stan Lee cameo rankings, I think for this to rank top five feels right.
Yes. Yeah. It is his final farewell, but that Guardians one especially will always be my favorite. I love that they did that. It introduces the multiverse in its own little way right there, so it's pretty spectacular.
Kevin, and of course we've already said this is number one in the movie rankings with a bullet, 5.97 for Endgame to Infinity Wars, 5.88. So this is a clear victory for Endgame as far as the rankings are concerned. Kevin, is there anything else from Endgame that we haven't touched on that you want to bring up? I mean, we're going to have more time to chew on all of this in the Infinity Saga and where we're going in the weeks ahead. Next week is mostly going to be like fun shenanigans, but I'm sure both Mike and Chappelle are going to have things that they're going to want to talk about as it pertains to Endgame. So that conversation is going to continue. Do you have anything off the top of your head that you want to make sure that you're getting out here in this first episode of the Endgame series that we're doing?
I mean, we touched on the final battle most. We didn't really touch on the middle too much. We did a decent amount, right? Like, I loved a lot that was in there. Obviously, the emotionality of seeing T'Challa in this context was really heavy and hit hard, especially at the end, seeing him with his mom and Shuri in Wakanda. It's a great moment at the end there, but it really affects you differently, knowing the current situation, unfortunately. So there's a lot. I mean, we didn't touch on Thor that much. I mean, I think that's a whole different conversation to have. I think we talked about it in our previous podcast on this, and my thoughts haven't changed. Obviously, I can't really speak too much about it. I know that it didn't play as heavy as a joke-ish in this as, you know, I think it's remembered. I mean, it's definitely there, but it's mostly the other people reacting to him. The shots aren't as bad as, like, I think we've maybe exaggerated in our own heads. But I love what they did with that character. I thought, you know, the effects of it all made sense to me. It tracked. That's, you know, I don't know. It's a different conversation. I'm a chubby guy. I've fluctuated on weight pretty often.
Same, yeah, and very much so.
And for me, like, I understood what was happening, especially when it comes to depression and that stuff happening.
Yeah, look no further than this time that we're in. We're like at the start of it, I was like, okay, this is an opportunity to like lose weight and get buff and blah blah blah. And then, like, you know, one secret mission to eat chocolate chips behind your spouse's back too many, and suddenly spiraling out of control. And like, my weight has been has been fluctuating really hard in these past months. Like, and that is just like one example of the times where like depression has manifested in that form for me. So what Thor is going through in this movie is highly relatable, of like sort of like channeling your depression through like the sins of gluttony and sloth are, you know, things that I certainly channel my depression and grief through. So it definitely tracks for me, that I feel like I have lived that life for sure.
Yeah, and the reaction from the other people, right? I think that is the reaction that people would have. Unfortunately,
you get that. Exactly. Yeah, you don't get any empathy.
Yeah, yeah, for better or worse, like, that is reality of it. And you know, they still, and the catch is, of course, they still love him. And they're still trying to, you know, they still support him in their own ways as best as they can, while trying to save the world. But I do love, and I've said this at the end, I really like the fact that when he transforms, he doesn't all of a sudden transform back into young buff Thor. He is still the same, because his power is being a god of thunder, and he's supremely badass in this form. And I love that. I love that they didn't like, and now the depression is gone, you're back to being gorgeous again. It's that isn't what connects you to being worthy. The I'm so worthy moment, of course, I think is really powerful. And I think it's a great moment to acknowledge that, and to have his arc come to that idea that, like, you don't have to be this version of what people want you to be in order to be worthy. So I really love Thor in this. I love all the characters in this movie, I think, are so great. Yeah, and I just wanted to, I guess, throw that in. I'm sure there's other characters I've forgotten that we'll maybe hit on next time that we can discuss, but yeah, this movie, man, this movie.
It's clutch. It's clutch. All right, so coming next on Everything is Super, we will have Survivor Endgame. We're gonna put a lot of characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and especially from Avengers Endgame, into war with one another one last time here, at least for a while. I think just by the nature of how many people we have to try and account for, sadly, General Thunderbolt Ross will be in retirement. I don't think he's going to make the cut this time on the cast, which feels uncool, considering how much we have done with him in the Survivor simulations that we've done so far. But I'm really looking forward to it. And then Kevin and I will be breaking down the Infinity Saga and just looking back on this whole adventure and looking forward to what's ahead, both in the MCU and also here on Everything is Super a couple of weeks from now. So that's the forecast for the next two episodes of Everything is Super: Survivor Shenanigans and then an Infinity Saga breakdown. Keep putting a pin in Spider-Man Far From Home just for the time being. We'll tell you what our plans are with that and everything else before too long. Follow Kevin. He's on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. Kevin, also podcasting on Lovecraft Country. We're getting close to the end of the line there.
Yeah, I'm really excited about where this is going to go. Maybe a little bit nervous. We had such a high point in the middle, but podcasting with you guys has been the real joy of this, right? Like, ups and downs of the shows aside.
Isn't it always?
I think, yeah.
Isn't it always?
Being able to talk about this stuff with friends is really the joy of television, I think.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. That's what it's all about. Also, just to tease that when Lovecraft Country is over, that there may be another show that Kevin, myself, and LaTanya Starks are getting involved in soon. No spoilers except to say that it's The Mandalorian.
Good job. I was going to be like, oh, what can we say? Like, we're going to go to a different galaxy far, far away, and which is already giving it away in and of itself. But
so if you're excited about The Mandalorian, we are going to have a weekly podcasting coverage of The Mandalorian. Kevin, myself, and LaTanya coming up once season two starts. We'll have a preview show. That's a couple of weeks away. But just to put that on your radar, if you haven't watched The Mandalorian yet, or if you want to rewatch it, that will not be on the Everything is Super podcast. It will be its own podcast feed here on Post Show Recap. So the best way to make sure that you do not miss that episode is to subscribe to the main feed for now, the main Post Show Recap feed on your podcast app of choice. You can also sign up for the Post Show Recaps Patreon program, because that way we will annoy the shit out of you and make sure that you really don't miss the Mandalorian podcast through that avenue. And also, we're getting into all sorts of hijinks and insane amounts of fun through the patron stuff, whether it's the patron podcasts that we're doing. Kevin is actually joining Emily Fox and I for the next episode of Post Show Recaps Theater, our weekly movie club. We're going to be talking about Scream coming up this week. That's going to be dropping in the Post Show Recaps patron feed on Thursday morning coming up. So if you're not a patron yet and you want to hear that podcast, it's coming up real soon, and I think it's going to be a doozy. But we also have the Discord, which is where our community is at. This is where we talk to each other, shout stupid like memes at each other and GIFs, and speak to each other in haikus and all sorts of other assorted chicanery. Lots of Strigoi, lots of really fun stuff, speculation on what's ahead in the Marvel movies. You know, in its own way, the Discord is like it's completely different beast than a podcast, but it's a really exciting and fun, fleshed out extension of what we do here on the podcast. So basically, if you want like Everything is Super more than just the once a week, you could effectively get the spirit of it almost 24/7 if you are part of the Discord, which is available at the $10 a month level. So check that out, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We'll be back very soon with our next episode of Everything is Super. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.